The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 602, recorded on February 17th, 2021.
Welcome to the 602nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 436th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Denzer.
I'm Scott Garr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
You know, I think I'm wrong about that 436th. I'm going to have to check again. Anyways, so, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Valheim with some friends.
So, before you go on, there are no news items this week because there's no time to wait for a car to go by, or motorcycle, there we go. And, a lot of the news is not really news, but so I decided, you know what, we have the Nintendo Direct going on, so we're just going to jam for this week. And Valheim is the fastest growing game in many a decade. It is becoming uber popular really, really fast.
Yeah, it's like Don't Starve, but much more forgiving. And the graphics are
creepy.
They're not focused on making the best graphics, so I think it allows a lot of people to have easier access to the game, because some people don't always have the best computers, and so it runs real well online. But anyways, you're a Viking who has been summoned by Odin, and you have to pass this trial of defeating five forsaken beasts, and once you've taken them out, you ascend to, I think, Valhalla to do this one last battle to fight ice giants or whatever. And let's see, I've done a lot of exploring in the game, and you can do crafting, and you again to build houses, and you get attacked by the various Forsaken forces, and it's fun and entertaining, and like I said, much more forgiving than Don't Starve, which can just, you know, a disaster comes and everything's wrecked. Here, it's like you get a real good chance to build things up and, you know, just create your own little Viking hamlet.
Yeah. Here's something you might find interesting. The developer, which is Iron Gate, I believe, they're based out of Sweden, I think. I know the co-founder is Henrik Tornqvist, and I remember him being boss of a different developer. But he said that the game is not based on survival games. They based the game on Zelda and Skyrim. And you might be able to see the influences in that in Valheim.
Yeah, it does make sense, because the food doesn't rot. The weapons will degrade, but you can easily repair them, so they won't like permanently break out of your inventory. You can just fix them once they've reached zero durability, so I think that does make sense. I think a lot of other survival games, the equipment would break and you'd get killed a lot easier. Here, it's like you can go run, pick up your stuff. If you die, your stuff is still there. So it's it is a much more forgiving survival game. But I guess maybe adventure game is more apt.
Have you been playing it, teacher?
No, I've heard all about it, but I have not had a chance to jump in myself. It sounds great from what Scott and others have told me about it.
So, here's the thing. The graphics, you make it sound like, no, they're actually kind of pretty. If I were to describe it to you, I would say it's like the first year of World of Warcraft.
Yeah, that's what I mean by that. You know, it's not Ark. Ark has much prettier graphics, and it's much more demanding. I think Subnautica was also higher level graphics and more demanding on the system, whereas I find this one there's kind of a lushness to the graphics without being like high detail It's nice. It doesn't hurt the eyes or anything. It's just that you can tell the difference between this level of graphics and, say, Ark, you know.
Did we talk about Odin last week?
No. Or we talked about Hugin, I think, a few weeks ago.
Because in Valheim, everybody was talking about this figure who's in the background, who's watching you, and he only has one eye.
I haven't seen that yet, but I have seen little lights in there in the darkness. Sometimes the fireflies or the little enemies called graylings.
There'll be a guy in a hood, and sometimes you'll see his one eye, and basically that's Odin.
But yeah, I've seen that story.
That's Odin.
Good stories.
So Odin is watching you do this.
Yeah, because you're trying to do a test and...
Yeah, by the way, this game takes place in the afterlife, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you're already in the afterlife. You're just being requested to do this test, and then you get to go to this final battle, I think, or something like that.
Ragnarok?
No, it's Valhalla.
He said it was like just another battle. But
it's just battle.
Yeah.
You're just in Valhalla, and you have to. So, DJ, what have you been playing?
I have been playing on. Well, let me think for a second. Okay, I can talk about this one. I've been playing on the Guilty Gear Strive beta.
Oh, okay.
Oh my god, that game is gorgeous. It might be the most beautiful fighting game that I've ever seen, played, or heard of. It's so gorgeous.
What was the name of the game? You kind of slurred it for me.
I'm sorry?
What was the name of the game?
Guilty Gear Strive.
Oh, okay.
And this is, of course, from my favorite developers, Arc System Works.
Yeah, well, if it has Guilty Gears in it, you're going to be all over it, like white on rice.
But, like, it's better than everything else, by far. And I mean, like, I love Dragon Ball FighterZ. I love Granblue Fantasy Versus. This is a step above those. It is the next generation of Guilty Gear in every single way. The characters are so gorgeous.
By the way, we must point out that the it's anime-esque.
Very anime-esque. The characters are gorgeous. The physics on like their animations are just jaw-dropping. It's smooth, like buttery smooth all the way through, and the movesets are just incredible. The big reveal behind this particular open beta was the netcode, and like fighting game netcode is one of the most important things nowadays, especially with what's going on in our current situation with this pandemic. Fighting game netcode and online stability has become one of the most important things of the modern genre.
Yeah.
And so one of the big things that they delayed Guilty Gear Strive for, because it was originally supposed to come out in 2020, they delayed it to implement a new form of netcode, rollback netcode, which is used in, I think, a handful of games now.
I'm going to guess which is the character you use most. Okay.
Which one?
Mei.
She's cool. My favorite character so far that I've been playing a lot in the beta was Giovanna.
Okay.
She is a Brazilian, uses a lot of kick attacks, and has a spirit wolf that joins her for a lot of her attacks. And like every one of these characters, like I could fiddle around with any one of them and have fun. But Giovanna in particular, I really liked her style. I've always been a fan of like Taekwondo-esque characters, and she has sort of that style too.
She's the one who sort of looks like a slutty version of Lara Croft with red hair.
Sort of?
She's got boobs for days, and she doesn't mind showing them off.
I wouldn't say that she's more showy than some of the characters that I've seen in anime games. But
she's wearing a push-up bra, and she already has large breasts.
She does. I'll admit that. But I really just like I enjoy her fighting style. I enjoy like the spectral wolf thing. It's cool what you can do with like what she's got going on.
Yeah, that green wolf. The green wolf.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, so this rollback netcode, a lot of, like, streamers and pro fighting game scene players had access to this, including Justin Wong, Sonic Fox, Alex Jabaley, who runs the CEO tournaments. And, like, we're talking about people that were playing matches from the East Coast in the United States all the way to Japan and reporting, like, near offline play experiences. And that is incredible.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Microsoft was very adamant about with a game like Killer Instinct, and that is you got to have a good netcode. You got to have buttery smooth netcode, or else, you know, because in the world we're in, and even without the pandemic, you know, it's getting to the point in which you really need to, you know, because that was what was revolutionary about Street Fighter IV for the PC, was that the netcode was extremely good, especially just for the time, at the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like every fighting game better run smooth on multiple connections, or else you're not going to have a game. And I'm giving a dirty side glance to Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, Super Smash Brothers. It's almost criminal that's one of the games that just has the most garbage of all netcodes. And they don't care. Nintendo does not care about it. They will not fix it.
Runs fast in Japan, that's all they really need to know.
They don't see it as a competitive game. They see it
I don't know how they do that when they keep adding characters.
We'll talk about that when we talk about Nintendo Direct. Yeah.
I know. I'm just saying they just...
Because Nintendo is a toy company, and that's how they view themselves. You know, they view themselves as a toy company. They don't view themselves as a video game manufacturer, except for video games are for kids.
Even a party game shouldn't have netcode that shitty.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. Like, I don't know. It's criminal. But Guilty Gear Strive, I've been waiting on this game for so very long. It's going to be, like, the make or breaker of my 2021.
I was about to ask, when is it supposed to be coming out?
It's supposed to be coming out in April. This has been a test of its online capabilities. There's actually an open beta for all pre-order players supposed to be happening tomorrow, which as of this game,
they're going to crush the servers, aren't they?
Be probably over, but it is going to be like a stress test. It's going to be letting people see how the rollback works, and then they're going to reveal two more characters and then launch in April.
That's interesting, because Sony's doing their stress test of MLB The Show on February 23rd. And it's going to be anybody who owns a PlayStation 5 can join in, and it's 50,000 Xbox users who can join in.
Interesting. It's interesting that they just have a certain limitation on that, like, as opposed to... It's an open beta, but you have to
it's
make
not
it in...
not quite open.
Gap.
I mean, you have to be, you know, you have to be accepted.
Uh-huh.
They've been showing a lot of stuff about MLB The Show, and the only thing they're going to be able to do during the stress test is Diamond Dynasty, which is fine, because you can play the solo. You know, you don't have to play against other people. It's just a stress test. And even if you play solo, it's still going to be testing their servers with Diamond Dynasty.
Yeah. Well, that'll be fun and interesting.
The only thing that has me giving me pause is that...
I'm playing more Guilty Gear this weekend. I'm going to play the heck out of that game while I can and learn everything I can about the characters I'm interested in.
They're tying Road to the Show with Diamond Dynasty, which gives me a little bit of pause because of what 2K did with, you know, My Player. But on the other hand, I don't think it'll have as much of an effect, especially since you can do whatever difficulty you want. So, I mean, just if you can adjust the difficulty, you know, that's fine. Let me ask you a question. Now, I know you're interested in MLB The Show this year. What are you going to be looking for most from that game?
There are games like Baseball Stars where you go in there and you just have a fun time. To me, MLB The Show is like the presentation. I want to see like what I want them to put together the ballparks. I want to like feel authenticity.
Yeah, that's the not secret is that they're going to have ballparks you can create your own.
Yeah, but like I want to feel the authenticity of these ballparks. I want to feel them like on a level that we haven't seen before. I want to see them on a I want to feel them on a PS5 level. Like I can't go to Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City right now. It's not possible. But I would like to. And if this is my way of doing that, then I'll find that acceptable.
Well, I mean, in New York, they have 10% capacity on stadiums right now, so by the summer, that should increase.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, in the meantime, like, if MLB the show 2021 takes it to that level, like, it really actually takes advantage of the next gen and really makes everything just, like, jaw-dropping, and then provides a good gameplay experience on top of that. The presentation is what I want out of that game more than anything. The pageantry.
Yeah. At least they're starting to show a little bit of the graphics, and they're okay. I mean, they look like PS4 graphics, to tell you the truth. But we'll see. So, getting back to Guilty Gear. How are you going to try and be professional with this one?
Absolutely. I'm like already scoping out the characters that I want to use, like, mainly. I've been practicing a lot with Giovanna, but I'm gonna probably move around a few of the characters. Axel,
yeah.
Lowe, the guy with the bandana and the sickle and chains, has always been one of my go-tos.
Well, here's a question: the characters that you're playing that were in previous editions, are they that much different in movement?
Some of them are absurdly different, like. Axel, for instance, he uses a sickle and chain, and on previous game and in the previous game when he would throw his chain attacks, it would hit enemies going out, and then it would hit them and pull them towards him coming back in, and they seem to have gotten rid of that second hit, and so I'm having to relearn a lot of what worked about him, or at least what worked for me. Because I can't rely on that second hit to pull my opponent back towards me like I used to. So I have to rely a little bit more on his keep away game, which is kind of what he's always been about, is like playing at range, keeping opponents away from him, playing a zoning game. And it's a little less about like the upfront combo style that I used to use. And that's the same, can be said of a lot of the returning characters in the game. They have many of their same tricks, but they're reworked in ways that fit the style of the new game. Like Guilty Gear Strive, it has a feature in which if you get an opponent up against the wall of the stage and attack them enough to crash them into it, they can break through the wall of a stage and do, like, a stage transition, like in Dead or Alive or Tekken.
Or Injustice, too.
Yeah. And they'll take more damage from it, you'll gain more meter, and so there's, like, a strategic importance to, like, making that stage break happen. And like, a lot of these, their kits have been reworked to factor in, like, that stage-breaking tactic.
Did you say you played Wreckfest last year? Last week?
I did not play Wreckfest, but I have... not last week.
What was the game that you're talking about that was a car combat game?
Destruction All-Stars.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I was just wondering, because Wreckfest is on Game Pass, and it's done by Bugbear, who's done the games like Flat Out and Tough Trucks, you know, and Ridge Road, you know.
Wreckfest is fantastic. It's probably one of the best physics-based drivers that I've ever played.
Well, Bugbear's been doing this for a very long while. I mean, the entire Flatout series was what Wreckfest is. They're actually working on a new game called Stuntfest.
Interesting. If you've never played Wreckfest, I would say go for it. It's some of the most fun.
No, I was just wondering, because you were talking about a Destruction Derby game last week.
Destruction All-Stars is very much more arcadey. Wreckfest is far more technical, I would say.
Yeah. So, I created a character in Project Winter, so I'll be trying that soon. And,
nice.
Yeah. Mostly, I've here's the thing. I wanted to play Middle-Earth Shadow of War again, and then, you know, I said, no. I own Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor, right, the previous game. And it's interesting when you play a game, it's sort of like you playing Demon's Souls, right? I started playing Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor, and it's sort of like a lot of things that I'd gotten used to in the sequel were not in the original game, like double jumps, you know, and some other stuff. And it's like, it's hard to play because you've seen it done better, and it no longer seems like you're being held back. You know, it's like, damn, they did this so much better in the sequel. I miss all the stuff you can do in the sequel that you can't do here. Otherwise, I've just been playing a lot of Slay the Spire, because I'm trying to beat the final boss, and it's almost impossible.
Have you fiddled with the new character that they put in recently?
What? Yeah. Oh, the Silent? Not the Silent. The Watcher? Yeah, she's too difficult to even beat the final boss. Not the final boss, but the boss with. She's so finicky. No, I've been basically doing it with the Defect. He's the one who summons these orbs around him. The Watcher, who's the blind woman, she's... With her, it's a little bit too random. You know? I don't think I can master her. I can do the guy who does poison and have him beat the final boss. Not the final boss, but the final boss. But the Watcher, I can't do. I just can't. She's too difficult for me. So yeah, I haven't been doing much. I haven't gotten back to the medium yet. I just think I'm not in the mood for Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Although someone else pointed out that the medium's more like Darkseid than it is Silent Hill.
Darkseid
is an old game based on H.R. Giger. Look it up. It's kind of creepy. Anyways, we're going to talk about Nintendo Direct. And there's one word that I've been seeing over and over and over again after the show and on a lot of YouTube channels, and the word is underwhelming. And I think I know why. So this is the first Nintendo Direct they've done in 600 days? It doesn't quite sound right, but it's true. They haven't done a Nintendo Direct for a very long time. And there was a lot built up about this, you know?
It was all the expectations.
It was all expectations. And basically what we got was a lot of ports, DLC, remasters, and very little original stuff. And a lot of the original stuff, there's one JRPG, not the one you're thinking of, Scott, the one before it, which I said managed to out-anime Code Vein, and I didn't even think that was possible.
So you're not talking about Bravely Default or the Triangle?
No, it's the one before that was shown before that. I will say this, one of the games was... Here's one of the biggest problems. One of the big problems is that one of the announcers sounded like he was a sophomore in high school. And
he might have been.
He's describing Outer Wild. And it's like, here's the thing. Outer Wild is a meditative game which AV Club said was, this is the official, oh God, I'm going to die in space game. It was like if you were describing Citizen Kane, it'd be like, and so there's this really rich guy, and he has a final word, and people try to figure out what this final word meant. And so we go all over New York's. It just sucks all the energy out of Outer Wilds. It made it sound like some RPG maker game, you know. So, the first thing it introduced was, Xenoblade Chronicles and Super Smash Brothers. Big whoop. I mean, it's going to be big whoop to people who play Super Smash. But as a news, but leading off your show, that was kind of flaccid. Then they finally discussed the what Zelda game they're going to be remaking, and that is Skyward Sword. And Scott, you said you never played Skyward Sword.
Right, I didn't play it on the Wii U. I only had the Wii, and by the time I played Twilight Princess, but then I didn't get a chance to get to the Skyward Sword. So I actually would look forward to this on the Switch because I get to play it. You know,
it's on July 16th. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that really was weird was that the announcer felt the need to talk about what Skyward Sword's game mechanics were and tell people, this is nothing like Breath of the Wild.
That's not what he said. He said, this is what got put into the Breath of the Wild. I mean, this is what came before Breath of the Wild, so kind of like evolved into what we see in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. He went like 5 minutes talking about how you play Skyward Sword. That's not what you do in a presentation. Especially one that doesn't have someone actually playing it in front of you. You know, you might expect that, say, if you're at a, you know, not a convention, but, you know, one of the press briefings by Sony or Microsoft, and they have someone, okay, we're going to have this person come on with them joystick in hand, and they're going to play it, and they're going to describe what they're doing as they're playing it. No, this is just show some videos and talk about how the game plays, as if you've never played any Legend of Zelda at all.
Well, I think they're doing something different because they had to adapt the motion controls to the controllers, and I don't think we use joysticks to control the sword directly. We use it to control the movement of the character, so that'll be different. I guess I have to see how it works when it comes out, and then can see if it translates well to the controls.
Here's the thing. They made a big deal of the 35th anniversary of Legend of Zelda coming up, right?
Yeah.
You know what I would have done? I would have made a 3D remake of the original Legend of Zelda.
That'd be a whole new game. That'd be on the level of what they're doing with.
Exactly, but it would be interesting.
Yeah. It would feel something new.
Okay. Yeah, you know, for Monster Hunter Rise, I could have sworn that was Commander Shepard narrating it. That had to have been Jennifer Hale.
I guess you could try to find out if it was. I don't know.
I don't know. But everything in it, you know, and people said it was underwhelming, and I know why, because a lot of it was boring. I mean, do we really care about Tales from the Borderlands? Seriously? Or Stubbs the Zombie?
Someone might.
Stubbs the Zombie, the original Xbox game from 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of things that were misses for me.
Neetopia?
Well, but it was a pretty dense presentation.
I don't think it was all that dense. They spent a lot of time on Plants vs. Zombies Battleful Neighborville.
Well, that was different.
No, it's not different. That's a port. That's a port of an Xbox game. Now, I will say, but here's the thing. I will say that once it comes out on the Switch, it's going to be better than any multiplayer game that's going to be on the Switch. All of them. And that's including their big announcement, Splatoon 3. And to me, I would have started the show with Splatoon 3 and just briefly mentioned the DLC for Super Smash Brothers. Splatoon 3 is an opener, it's not a closer.
Good one to end it with, because that game looks really fun. That was probably one of my favorite things the entire presentation was Mario Golf Super Rush. Yeah.
The golf game looks fun. I like that they have a story mode.
Here's the thing. I'm not saying that I'm down on everything. I mean, of the DLC that they're doing, the Animal Crossing Super Mario Brothers looks good.
Oh, that is excellent. We need more interactive items in that game, not just stuff that sits there and does nothing. So, you know, being able to like collect the coins and then they come back. The warp pipe is an excellent idea because then you could create like a mountain that you can jump in a pipe and go up to, kind of thing, and it looks like a lot of fun. There's mushrooms and the coin blocks and just and you can just buy the stuff so you don't have to wait for like a one point of the year to get it. You can get it at any point in time once the DLC is out, so that looks great. And I really hope they add Metroid and Zelda stuff eventually.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they are. They definitely are. I mean, there wasn't enough of No More Heroes 3.
I agree.
That would have been something that you'd really want to brag about.
They've been, like, Swery has been trickling information about that game so very slowly.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming out late summer, August 27th. But yeah, I mean, why focus so much on Miitopia, which is a half-assed Sims game?
I wouldn't even call it a Sims game.
Sims with a little bit of RPG in it.
Yeah.
I mean, they spent so much time on the physical version of Hades. I mean, Hades is a great game, but...
It looked nicer. It looks like a HD version of the 3DS version. It looks like the story's exactly the same. I saw a little bit, but it looks like they're doing the same animation, but it's like upgraded the graphics. But basically same animation, same story, I guess. I don't know. Did you do a new story or something? But maybe not. That was definitely meh for me.
You have a multi-platform game in there called Knockout City, and it's like, who cares? I know a lot of people are going to be interested in the Ninja Gaiden Master Collection, which has all three games and all the DLC. Mm. I know a lot of people are really into Ninja Gaiden. Hmm?
That does seem like a good deal if it's all three games, all DLC, and you get to play it on the Switch.
Yeah.
That seems like a good deal.
I have to ask you a question. What the hell is the Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity expansion pass? Do you have a season pass on that thing?
I didn't know that they did. I've been playing it a bit, and I guess I thought that the whole story was in there, so I guess they put more battles and scenarios.
I can actually tell you exactly what's going to be on
it.
So there's going to be two waves.
So it's a season pass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Its first wave is going to be available in June, and the second wave is going to be available in November.
I thought it was May. They announced it was going to be May 28th.
There's a purchase bonus that is going to be available in May if you pre-order it.
Oh, okay.
The purchase bonus is a couple new weapons and costumes for Link. But the first wave is going to be an expanded character roster, so they're going to put new characters in the game, new weapon types. And new challenging enemies, from what I can see here, and new challenges in the Royal Ancient Lab. The second wave is going to be more stages and further character expansions. And then new attacks for the existing characters.
Hmm. Something I didn't know. One of the games they announced is Neon White, and that's being developed by the guys who did Donut County.
You said that was a port as well?
What?
Neon White.
No, that's not a port. I said one of the games that was announced, Neon White, is being done by the developers of Donut County. Which is kind of a stretch for them, considering if you ever played Donut County.
Yes. I haven't played that, but it looked like a crazy game where you're, I guess, a demon in heaven fighting other demons other than
me. Yeah, and it just seems... Yeah, you play cards, I believe. And
you use
it's
cards
like,
to attack.
It seems like... what's the word I'm looking for?
Somebody said Slay the Spire. It was
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like puzzle game. I don't know. But let's talk about the biggest game that shows the most promise, and that's Project Triangle Strategy, which thankfully is just the working title. But I'm going to tell you right now, judging by some of the Japanese names of some games, I would not be shocked if it was released called Project Triangle Strategy.
Well, Project Octopath did become Octopath Traveler.
Yeah.
And, at least in that one, the thing, I don't know if you realize this, but in Octopath Traveler, the names of all the characters, the first letter spells out Octopath.
Mm-hmm.
That's, some clever there. I hope that they do something clever with the project.
So here's the thing. It looks like a bog-standard JRPG, right? It has the same kind of characters. They look sort of like, I wouldn't say 16-bit. They look more like 32-bit, right? But, sort of a slightly retro feel. But the big deal about it is that it's saying that your choices matter.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. JRPGs usually don't do that. Usually JRPGs have a story, and you're going to follow them story to the letter, no deviation. The one thing I have
deviations like Chrono Trigger.
They're JRPGs, you know. They just literally look at Final Fantasy XIII literally down one hallway. But here's the thing. What I'm hoping from Project Triangle Strategy is that choices are not binary. Like, well, if you say this, they'll be at war with you. If you say this, they won't be at war. You know, I hope that, and it seemed to hint that you'll have to make multiple choices about the same thing, and it'll be more subtle and more, you know, not binary choices in which you choose this or this, and that's it. No, so if you choose this, then later on you can have to make another choice, and later after that you can make another choice, and your choices are going to have subtle changes, not drastic changes. I'm saying I just don't want a Telltale type choice.
Yeah, I think what they were showing, there's like three.
There are three countries in one land. And you have to deal with all three of them, and they all have relationships with each other, mm-hmm. which is why they call it Project Triangle Strategy, because there's three countries.
The whole playstyle looks like Final Fantasy Tactics or Tactics Ogre, and it got like an Octopath treatment.
Well, see, that's why they say it's a tactical RPG, but to me it looks like a regular old JRPG. I don't think it's a tactical RPG.
It is a tactical RPG.
It is.
They actually showed like grid-based maps and like.
Oh no, I'm not talking about combat. I'm talking about, you know, exploration and stuff like that.
Oh well, like it is definitely a tactical RPG because of the combat.
You can explore. Yeah, you explore Final Fantasy Tactics.
No, I mean, well, for something like Final Fantasy Tactics, it's sort of like you're set up with a bunch of combat scenarios.
Mm-hmm. I get what you're saying, but like when it comes to the combat, it is very much a strategy, turn-based strategy RPG.
I just, like I said, I just hope the choices you have to make are more nuanced than say a Telltale game.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, I agree. I just want a really good depth story, and I think the potential is definitely there. And I'm trying to remember what they had said. So like I said, they mentioned the battle mechanics of attacking from up high gives you advantages, and so you know everything you're used to in a tactics game. And then they were talking about choices, and it did seem to be some sort of thing going on there. So you know, we can hope they choose a better title, but it looks very promising, and I'm very interested in that one.
I think that's the one that everybody is interested in. Not necessarily they think it's going to be great or anything, but at least it's something different. Because, like I said, a lot of the reactions have been underwhelming to Nintendo Direct. And the only reason for that is that there was no Direct since September 2019. Which is a very long time.
Yeah. It was really disappointing to hear that we'll be waiting even longer to see what Breath of the Wild 2 has for us, but at the same time, like, I think the thing that disappointed me, I'm a huge Metroid fan. That is like my childhood.
Yeah. You didn't hear anything about the new Metroid Prime coming. Yeah.
I didn't hear anything about Metroid period, and I really would like to because it's the 35th anniversary of Metroid this year too.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't expect much. There are two things that I would like to see this year. I would like to see Metroid Prime 4. I would also like to see them port the 3DS game Metroid Samus Returns over to the Switch.
Here's the thing that you can hang your hat on right now, is that almost all the games, except for Project Triangle Strategy, which is coming out in 2022, almost all of them are coming up by the very latest this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Which tells me
this Direct was purely for like the first half of 2021.
Yeah, because it'll be interesting to see what E3 is going to bring, because it's going to be a digital E3, and maybe they're going to bring out the big guns. Because here's the thing: one thing I was interested in seeing is if they were going to mention MLB the Show at all. I didn't think so, but I was wondering if they were going to mention it all, because that's one of the things that people noticed was they only announced an Xbox and a PlayStation version of MLB The Show. They didn't even announce a PC version, and I suspect the reason for that is that the Xbox and PlayStation versions are going to have two versions. The PC and the Switch are not the next generation. I mean, PC has no generations. And there's not going to be a new Switch, so they can't sell two versions of the same game. So I'm wondering if they're going to announce the PC and or Switch versions after it comes out on April, when people have already made their choice. So I'd say, oh, by the way, it's also coming out on PC. No, it's also coming out on Switch. And, you know,
I saw Bravely Default 2.
Yeah, they didn't say anything about that except for the fact it existed.
Yeah. But I mean, they've been talking about that, and they had like two demos for it, so I think most people are aware of it.
Yeah, they announced some demos directly that you could download right now after the after the stream. I forgot which ones. I know it was one of the JRPGs.
That was Project Triangle. They announced a demo for it.
Right. Okay.
That was available right now.
Cool. Then both of you are gonna have to play it and report back.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Do you know one was interesting to me? Like, I didn't know anything about it, but once I started reading up on it, I think I'm on board.
Star Wars Hunters?
Famicom Detective
Quest. Oh, yeah. They have two of them.
Is that a good... I'd like a good mystery game.
This is a remake. This was...
Yeah, these are localizations, actually.
No, the original Famicom Detective Club, and actually these two...
I know, they're from 88. I know, they're from 88, but these are localizations of the remakes that have been released in Japan already.
Right. So, it's interesting to... Like, they're dubbed as adventure games where you, like, actually... You make decisions based on the clues that you find, the people that you talk to, and it sounds like... It sounds like it's pretty in-depth. Like,
well, here's the thing. The original... The original was a text game. It had a text parser.
Yeah, and when I was first looking at it, I was thinking, like, visual novel? But no, it looks like it's actually got more choices to it than a visual novel.
Visual novels didn't exist in 88, damn it.
Right. So, I think I'm on board. I like the Phoenix Wright games. I like games like...
This one's going to be a little bit more in-depth than Phoenix Wright. Because this one... It's going to be more in-depth than L.A. Noire.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think I'm on board for that.
Here's the thing. The Detective Club games back in 88, I can't speak for the remakes, but they did not hold your hand. You had to fucking do investigations.
I can't imagine that they're any harder than, what was that, than Deja Vu from back in the day.
I remember that.
Or Shadowgate.
Oh, Shadowgate, that was my jam back in the day. That's my ringtone right now, actually, is the castle music. Oh, loved it.
So, like, I'm into it. If it's, like, on that same level, then yeah, I'm way into it.
Oh, yeah. I would love a Shadowgate-style game again. Because I thought Return of Shadowgate was going to do another game, but I guess nothing came of it. Yeah, I mean, there's still some interesting games in the lot, even if some of it's just ports and kind of underwhelming. And I really was kind of hoping for at least something to be mentioned for either Metroid or Zelda game. And I just wanted to verify that this isn't rumor that's going to be Metroid 4. We do have some reasonable that there is actually going to be Metroid 4. Time for?
Yeah, like, we know it's in development. It's just a matter of when they're going to reveal it and talk about it.
Yeah. So, let's quickly run through some of the other stuff that popped up, which we can talk about a little bit. Don't have to focus on it too much. There's finally a finally release date for New World, which is the MMO by Amazon. I mean, it's a bog-standard fantasy game, it looks like to me, but the fact that Amazon is doing it is very interesting. I think the beta is going to be on in March, I think?
Yes, I do believe so.
Yep.
It just got another delay. Like, the actual launch of the game, I think, just saw another delay. Let me make sure of this, but I'm almost certain that I heard that we reported on this week.
Is this on their new streaming service, or will you be able to download and...
I think it has a client.
Okay, not terribly delayed. It's going to be... It got pushed back into late summer.
Yeah.
The beta is still coming up, but like the full launch is pushed back into late summer.
Yep. Also, Microsoft is doing xCloud now through web browsers. So that stuff I've been doing on my cell phone, if I want to, I can do on my. Well, here's the thing. You can do it on a desktop, but why bother since your console's right there? This is more for stuff like the Surface and tablets and stuff like that, you know. So you can do it through a regular old browser instead of having to say you have an iPad. Well, guess what? Now you don't need to buy. Now you don't have to worry about iOS, you know, being in the iOS store and the Apple store. Now just do it through a friggin' browser.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm going to say this. You know, I'm loving xCloud. Because I'm the sort of person who will be in bed with a cell phone and have the... I got the things that attach to the side of the cell phone so it looks like a Switch controller. I got one of those, so I'm playing it on that.
That's right. You saw that they showed Switch controllers for the Monster Hunter game and for the Zelda Skyward Sword.
Yeah, Nintendo's always bringing out new hardware. I mean, it's nothing new.
I didn't know if they were going to be more durable Joy-Cons or if they're going to have Joy-Con drift as well, because that would suck.
Yeah.
Buy those, and they have Joy-Con drift.
By the way, speaking of drift, there's a lot of PlayStation 5 owners who are complaining about the drift on the new new gamepad that came with the PS5.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a really expensive hardware to be having this issue on.
And one of the things people are salty is that Sony's asked them to pay for the shipping there to repair it. They don't have to pay for it coming back, but they have to pay for it going there. Now, Microsoft is having connection issues with their controller, but fortunately, that sounds like a software problem. You know, the PlayStation 5 controller sounds like it's a physical problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the Joy-Cons, you know, people said, well, you know, until it became a full-blown class-action lawsuit. So you have to keep an eye on that PS5 controller drift.
I actually have been paranoid about this ever since I read this story, because when I was playing Cyberpunk 2077, I found that sometimes when I wasn't touching the joystick on some
start
of the
moving.
Menus, it would like scroll downwards, and at the time I was like, oh, this is probably Cyberpunk 2077's fault because this game is buggy as holy hell. But now I'm second-guessing myself and watching
there,
that stuff.
There was
like
one Twitter guy, a person on Twitter who had the controller and was having Destiny 2 on it, and he was not touching the controller, and he just kept panning to the left as if he was turning around, and he kept panning to the left without him even touching the controller.
I've seen the video, and it terrifies me. I don't want that to happen.
And here's the thing. If you send your controller back, it's not like you can go to the store and buy a new PS5 controller, because those things are expensive.
Yeah. Exactly, it's my issue.
I mean, I bought a new Xbox One controller by PDP for $25 because one of my older controllers finally broke down. So, you know, $25 is the sweet spot for me for a controller, especially if they last a long time.
Yeah, it's you know.
I don't need the haptic feedback, damn it! Or what's the thing with the trigger, you know, that gives resistance depending on what you're doing?
I thought that was the haptic feedback or whatever.
It's not haptic feedback. It's something else. TJ, you know, the triggers have, vary their resistance depending on what you're doing. Like if you're shooting different types of guns. I don't need that. I don't really care. What I want from a controller is that it points to what I'm pointing at.
There are some games where that whole function is kind of cool.
It's cool, but you know, it's
there are some games where it makes no sense to me. Like on Call of Duty Black Ops, it like gives you some resistance when you do the close aim down the sights button, and I don't understand why it would like push back on me doing that. I don't know. That makes no sense to me. But in Destruction All-Stars, when you crash into somebody and like the acceleration or the brakes jerk, I kind of think that makes sense and is cool.
You know, let me ask you a question. If your car gets damaged, does the do those triggers start going wonky as if I can't control this car?
You feel like the shaking, like the swirling of the wheels, like shaking on their axles. You actually feel that in the triggers, and I like that.
By the way, we should mention with the new Mario Golf, you can use your Joy-Con as a Wiimote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can hold it to swing the golf club, so that seems fun. I like that idea. I enjoyed it on the Wii when we had golfing on that, and you could swing your Wii remote.
You were going to say something dirty, weren't you? You can swing your all you want.
Just make sure you use your wrist strap and don't throw the remote through your ceiling.
Yeah. Oh my god. I'm pretty sure the Joy-Con won't break people's TVs, but you know, who knows? It might dent it or scratch it.
Right, let's talk about a game that I think TJ's excited about, and I know I'm excited. I know that Paul's probably really excited about that, and that is even before they had the final trailer for it, they actually had a developer video for Evil Genius 2, which actually walked you through everything that you're doing. Like, there's one specific kind of guy. You know, you'll have the good guys coming into your thing to investigate your base, and you could have this one guy who just charms them and convinces them to leave. There's nothing going on here, you know. Evil Genius 2 is looking really, really deep.
Yes, that game, I want to play it so bad. Oh my god.
And here's the thing. It is so much like Dungeon Keeper in its aesthetic, even though it's, you know, it's a James Bond sort of thing. But it is so Dungeon Keeper in the way that you dig out the earth and the rooms and all that stuff. It just reminds me so much of Dungeon Keeper.
Did you see that a while ago?
What?
I feel like I remember this like a while ago.
Yeah, Dungeon Keeper like on the cell phone, that sucked. But anyway, Evil Genius looks like a fitting successor to not only Evil Genius, but also Dungeon Keeper. It looks really, really good. Because now you have to have people going on missions to get you money. You have to... Here's the thing about Evil Genius. It was fine, and so was Dungeon Keeper. But Evil Genius 2 makes you feel more like you're a part of an entire world. Mm-hmm. And that's the exciting part, in that it's not just about your base. It's about everything.
It's a business sim. You gotta be involved in the Evil Genius.
You're trying to take over the world, but you know what? We want to see what the world is like. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, even more than that, it's like you feel, and you can have other bases too, and you can spread out. It just feels more like you're in the middle of a living, breathing world that's fighting back against you. In Dungeon Keeper 2 and Evil Genius, you know, it was sort of like you had your base and there's stuff outside, but you really didn't care about the stuff that was outside except when they send people to you. No, here, you have to interact with that world to even make money, you know? You have to send your agents out on missions, you have to do this and that, and the more stuff you do, you know, the more interaction with the other world that you do, which you have to do, the more the other world starts paying attention to you and saying, who are these guys? You know, you actually have to build up a reputation before anyone even cares about you.
You have to build a criminal empire, and it's not just like buy crimes. It's like there are different what types of crimes do you want to buy?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny is it hasn't even come out.
I like it. I really like what they've got going on in that game. I really like how they've expanded on what they had before.
And you know what? I did not realize this, but Evil Genius 1 came out in 2004. It's been 15 years since the last Evil Genius, and it's coming out on March 30th. So there we go. I am hoping it is what it sits out to be. You know, like if this turns out to be a lemon, then I'll be really depressed.
Yeah, that would be a real shame.
But it doesn't look like it. Looks like it is solid. And, you know, Rebellion is a good developer.
Yeah.
And I think Rebellion is the ones who did the Sniper Elite games.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yep. But it does look like 60s James Bond, complete with afros on some of the henchmen. I also like the way the rooms are filled out. These guys hold out a beam and this tiny version of it, and it just expands and grows until you place it down. So, yeah, I mean, if you really want to see what it's like, just go to Evil Genius 2 Gameplay with Developer Commentary, because that's the video that tells you a lot more than the trailer did. It actually came out before the trailer. So, anyway, I think, is there anything else you want to discuss? Because I think Epic says they're going to have more exclusives. That's nice.
Yeah, what else is new? I think we've discussed most everything from the Nintendo Direct.
Like I said, you know, there's only one game, really, from Nintendo Direct that I think people are going to care about, and that's Project Triangle Strategy. I mean, there's others, you know, like the Famicom Detective Club, and, you know. Yeah, Fall Guys is coming out on the Switch. Who cares?
Good Lord. Somebody cares.
Somebody cares. But not many people care anymore.
Me.
Yeah. I mean, there are people that I saw on my Discord group that like that Legend of Mana is coming to Switch.
But that's a remaster, though. It's not a new game. You have Monster Hunter Rise, which is going with a really anime-esque... I mean, that was really...
They're doing a good job with that game. I played a hands-on of it, and it plays tremendously smooth for being a highly detailed Monster Hunter game.
It's a Saturday morning cartoon version of Monster Hunter.
Yeah, but like it still plays like I was surprised at the amount of detail they were able to shove into that game and still make it run that smoothly.
Well, it is Monster Hunter. I mean, that's what it does.
Also, I'm real like Mario Golf is the one that I came away most excited about.
I guess I mean you know, there hasn't really been a bad Mario Golf game. Let's put it that way.
No, there hasn't, and I like the story modes in those games, and they're going to have one in this game. I really enjoy that.
That like, does look exciting.
The one thing about Mario Golf, by the way, is that it's a lot more detailed than people would expect from a golf game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also,
it does take the golf seriously.
They showed off looked like stupid fun.
What?
Also, the speed golf gate.
Oh yeah.
Looks like stupid fun.
Yeah, they show you a lot of details on your shot. You can analyze the terrain.
You can cheat because you can have a robot eyes.
Detail.
You can have robot eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, generally Nintendo, I think, is keep it as simple as possible kind of thing. And here, it's like you're kind of going into the full analytical detail of, you know, here's how the ground slopes, and here's the wind, and here's the, you know, it's like really detailed, so it can give you your best shot. So that is a really good point.
And if people think that Dark Souls is hard, they can always try the first Ninja Gaiden now.
Yeah.
It'll say, yeah, you think Dark Souls is hard? Well, hold my beer.
Here's the ninja version of Dark Souls.
No, I think Dark Souls aspires to be Ninja Gaiden 1.
Okay.
They want specifically Ninja Gaiden Black.
Do you play the Smash Brothers game anymore, TJ?
I haven't for a while, specifically because of the netcode, and I don't know play with.
Right.
Why would you want to play Smash Brothers when you can play Guilty Gear? Come on.
I keep forgetting. You're right. Never mind. It's like, excellent point. I forgot. Multiplayer sucks.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like Microsoft and like I fixed that ago.
I played the heck out of the game when it first came out, but like right. I beat everything that it has to show me, and I don't want to play by myself anymore.
So right. Here's a question for you, TJ. Are you going to get the physical edition of Hades?
Probably not. I think it looks cool, but I'm probably not going to pick it up.
Comes with a soundtrack, and you love the soundtrack.
Like a CD soundtrack?
Yes. It comes with a physical... It's a physical edition.
Well, I know, but the physical edition for Switch would be a little cartridge.
They also... Well, they have a download code for the soundtrack, too. So.
Okay. Might as well get on Steam.
They do have an art book, though.
Yeah.
It is a nice kind of relaxing game. Like, a lot of RPG games, you have to put in hours to progress. Here, it's like you could just do an escape run and, get your fill kind of thing, and then you progress a little bit, and you could just come back later, It's like, it's just a nice kind of chill game in a way. It's kind of weird to say for, an action game, but it's...
Well, here's the thing. It's actually tied into the story, the gameplay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In that, you become overpowered, but that's the entire point now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, eventually you will, after, escaping maybe 100 times or something.
I mean, the entire point is that you're pissing off your dad.
Yeah.
And your dad is saying, cut it out, or else I'm going to come down there and show you what for, and eventually he does. And what I like about it is that the game has a beginning, middle, and end. There is a finish to the game.
I haven't gotten that far yet, but I'm
the game does end.
Yeah.
I know it's not RGM either, but I think that Splatoon 3 is actually going to do quite well.
Here's the thing. Splatoon... they had it on the Wii, they had it on the Wii U, now they have to have it on the Switch. And the thing is that...
Splatoon obviously has to have good netcode to do... competitive play.
It's mediocre, but that's not the point though. The point is that Nintendo has very few multiplayer games, actual multiplayer games, and Splatoon is one of them.
It has a very dedicated community too. I know I have a lot of friends that will live and die by that game.
Here's the thing: don't sleep on Plants vs. Zombies: Battle for Naperville, because that is what Battlefield wants to be.
Right.
The only problem I have with it is that it's not as good as 2.
Yeah. And I'm not downplaying Plants vs. Zombies either. I'm just saying that Splatoon 2, the Splatfest, everybody got super hyped every time there was ever a Splatfest. And that game, as far as the cosmetics, the things you can do in it, it is also one of the few games I've ever seen Nintendo actually legitimately support the competitive scene on.
Here's the thing, though. I'm hoping that it took so long to come out on Switch because they're going to have more than just a few levels. That Splatoon has a shockingly low number of levels for a competitive game. You need to have a lot more levels than that.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that... I mean, this game doesn't come out until 2022, so, they're probably going to go full-on on improving it in every single way.
You'd think. Like I said, I just hope, Nintendo got the message from Evo.
Mm-hmm.
And Evo's selling... you better have fucking netcode on your shit. Because talking about having... Well, here's the thing. Also, Nintendo has to be a little less heavy-handed when it comes to online games. If people want to do do an online competition, don't hassle about what they're using to do the online competition with. Just let them do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Anyways,
it'll be interesting to see how this does. I feel like the community is still there. I feel like they still love this game, and I don't think it's good. Splatoon 2, even right now, having about 4 years later, it has sold 11.9 million copies, which puts it in the top 10 of Nintendo games. But
one thing about Splatoon 3 is that one thing I noticed from the very little gameplay they did show is that it looks like there's going to be a lot of verticality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so far off still, and it'll be interesting. They're probably going to do a lot more reveals leading up to it because it is such a community-heavy game.
Here's the thing. I think one of the reasons why it's so popular is that you don't have to be good at combat. You can just decide, my job is just going to be painting the floor. You guys fight. I'm going to make sure that we win because I'm painting the floor. I'm following that guy over there. I'm red, he's blue. He thinks I'm not following him. Well, guess what? I'm turning his blue to red right away.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, there are so many different weapons in that game, too. And, like, if you don't have a good composition of weapons, your team is going to get flopped.
Yeah. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Chard and More.
And we will see you next week, and we will talk more about news then. But, you know, it's just that the Nintendo Direct basically was the news this week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.